I started developing this difficult relationship with food. I started to count each and every calorie. I started reducing and secretly hiding foods. So, you know, I throw food away. I started seeing myself fat. I was never fat. And I became obsessed with the idea, oh my God, I look so fat. I look at the mirror and I hated it. I hated what I saw.
Welcome to a new episode of Most Memorable Journeys. My guest today is from a little island like mine, and I don't think I've had anybody from Malta yet on my podcast, if I think back. She is an empowerment coach and a mindfulness teacher, but she's a lot more than that. She also taught me how to do a chakra dance, and she has taught me how to be beautiful and kind. She is just a very, very rounded, lovely person. Welcome to Most Memorable Journeys, Catherine Gallia.
Thank you. Thank you for welcoming me. Good morning. And yes, I am a Malteser. Yes, I come from a much smaller island than Cyprus. You can't even imagine how small our island is, but it's buzzing.
I know. I've been to Malta a few times and I like it. And I also have to say something here, I want to give a shout out to Saskia Costandino, because Catherine and I found each other because I was invited to Saskia's Unreserved radio show. And while I was talking, Catherine was listening. Tell us about that.
Well, I am not a person who listens to the radio, especially the Cypriot radios, because most of them go about in Greek and I don't understand Greek. But I came across Saskia and I said, wow, what a lovely woman, interesting subject that I'm interested in. And there you go, you were there. And you were talking about global women. And I had just moved to Cyprus. I didn't know many people, of course. And I said, this is really interesting. I had heard of global women back in Malta from another Maltese who lived in London. And I said, oh, I must visit it. I must get to know more about it. And I said to myself, and she seems to be such a lovely, joyful, like-minded woman, this Elizabeth. And then we got in touch.
And you started coming to our meetings, and we also met Sophia. And we're going to talk about Sophia later, because yeah, she's definitely worth a part in this chapter. Now, being from an island, when were you on a plane the first time? Because that's probably, okay, you could go on a ship, but mostly people travel away from islands by plane. How old were you when you left Malta for the first time?
Well, I started traveling rather late because my parents didn't like the idea of traveling. So I started traveling when I was 17, and on my own, of course, with a group, but on my own. So that was the first time I traveled. And I went to Germany on a student exchange. It was like we were 20 teenagers, basically, and we had our guides with us, responsible for us. And I was 15 days away. 15 days away was my first trip. And yeah, that was my first experience in Germany. We visited Hamburg, Lübeck, then we crossed over to Denmark. We went on a camping trip by the lake and we did sailing on the lake. Then we went to Berlin, and it was quite soon after the wall came down in Berlin. So, you know, there was that, which was very fascinating. And you could see the difference between, you know, the two parts of Germany still at that time. So that was also an insightful experience of what was happening in the world at the time. Yeah, and yeah, that was a long time ago. Yeah, but I started rather late traveling.
Yeah, that's not, I mean, I think our generation, I don't know, you're younger than I am, but I went on a plane the first time when I was 16. You know, it's not like now my kids were on a plane for the first time when they were 3 months old. Things have changed, you know, it's not the same anymore. And talking about Berlin, Berlin was also an island. You know, it's a bit like our islands that we live on. And I've experienced this change as well. It's a fascinating place, I think. And it's, you know, it fascinates me how people adjusted to the change.
Yes. Yes, that is very fascinating because they really blended in well, and you can see it now how they have developed what's happened in Berlin.
So, you know, it's actually true because it shows you that it's possible.
Yes, everything is possible once we are willing to have that possibility.
That is very true. That's what we teach. That's what we know. Now, other than your first trip, you have done something that I have always admired people who've done it. You've done the Camino de Santiago. That is something that I'd like to do, probably never will, because, you know, I always talk about things. Tell me a little bit about that experience. How was that?
I did the Camino in 2011, and I was going through many shifts in my life and many changes. I was still working in my other career as an insurance executive, but I was very much into the world of development, spirituality, meditation, training myself with other modalities. I was reading a lot of books, and the Camino de Santiago came in one book. Then I met a guy, a neighbor, who told me, I just came from the Camino de Santiago. And I said, that's it. I'm going to do the Camino. And in 1 month, I was doing the Camino. Thankfully, I was trekking. I was doing trekking every week. So I had the energy, the stamina to do it, because you need to prepare yourself. So, yeah, very, very quickly, I decided, okay, I'm reading about the Camino. It seems such a deep journey. So I'm going to do it. And I did it. And I managed to take time off work, even though I didn't have much time. So I managed to squeeze in the time off. I went on my own, and then I met people, and you build new relationships. And I see it's a journey that shows you, it teaches you a lot about life, how life is. It can be very philosophical if you let it to be. So, you know, I had moments of sadness and I embraced them. I had these moments of ecstasy, you know, even how you relate with people. You can really sometimes relate with people and communicate. Some people really irritate you. And it happened, you know, it was happening. There was this guy at that time who started to like me. So he was following me everywhere. And I was getting frustrated because I wanted my own time, because I went on my own. So I have my own time. But yet I had someone who wanted to be with me all the time. So, you know, you understand the dynamics and you start understanding more yourself, how you react, how you behave. So it was a very fascinating journey. And it was the time I drank most beer. I don't like beer. But I drink a lot of beer, cerveza con limón. And I didn't lose weight. It was one of the few trips I did abroad where I did put on weight, even though I walked a lot.
Because of the beer.
I know. So I laugh about it. I said, how come I didn't lose weight? When, not because I was trying to lose weight, but it's like, how come? I walked so much, but yet I managed to put on weight, maybe a kilo. So that was interesting. It was part, you know, of the whole experience.
Fascinating. I love listening to people who have done the Camino and who had this experience that you're saying. And you were saying that some people irritated you. And, you know, we say that the people that irritate you have something that you need to process yourself. You know, what you see in me is a reflection of you. And usually it's true.
Yes. And the thing is, he was really sweet. He was cutting flowers and putting them in my hair. And he brought me little gifts of the Camino because he was Spanish as well. So he was really sweet, but yet he was irritating me. So you understand the dynamics. And sometimes people who are not nice to us, we actually want them in our lives. So that was a really good reflection for me.
Yeah, that
was something I needed to see within me.
Yeah, that is so true. Now, you mentioned something before. You mentioned weight, the word weight, and you were walking the Camino and you didn't put on any weight. But there was a time in your life when weight was a big, big issue. Yes. What happened?
Well, around the age of 16, I would say, because I'm not now, my memory is not 100% anymore. But around the age of 16, I started developing this difficult relationship with food. I started to count each and every calorie. I started reducing and secretly hiding foods. So, you know, I throw food away. I started seeing myself fat. I was never fat. And I became obsessed with the idea, oh my God, I look so fat. I look at the mirror and I hate it. I hated what I saw. So I started, the way to resolve that was through food. And I started losing and losing weight until at the age of 20, I was hospitalized because I, can you imagine 20-year-old weighing 31 kilos?
That's
it's crazy. Like the weight of 11-year-old girl. And I was not hospitalized in a psychiatric ward. I was hospitalized in a medical ward because I was in danger of organ collapse because I had nothing to sustain me, to nourish me, to keep my body functioning. So I was kept in hospital for 3 weeks and monitoring my heart, organs, blood tests to make sure that I am okay. And they were trying to make me eat more food, but I used to throw away the food still at hospital. Can you imagine? I used to manage to do that. But anyway, I believe with the love and support of people around me, I started slowly getting out of it with a lot of struggle. At the point, I was having a lot of medications, which did not work. I can tell you, they did not work. And then after some psychology and after, I think it really started to heal. After I started getting into the world of yoga, meditation, spirituality, dance as a healing modality, using different things that helped me to start loving myself and accepting myself and to really see who I really am and understand what I was lacking in my life as a child and start giving them to myself. And that brought a lot of feeling. And nowadays, I don't count calories. Those times we didn't have, I'm talking back in 1993, 96, something like that, those periods, we didn't have internet, Wi-Fi, and you find everything, Google gives you everything. You know what I had bought? An Oxford Dictionary of Calories.
Oh my God.
And I studied by heart. I knew each and single calorie of food. So if you tell me apple, I would tell you it has 100 calories. If you tell me 100 grams of beef, because at the time I used to eat meat as well, 100 grams of chicken, 100 grams of this, I would know it by heart. It was like a Bible. And I used to measure each and every calorie of every food that I eat. So, and I used to be happy when I managed to eat less calories than recommended. And when I overeat, I was going to a depression.
Yeah. Amazing. So what is your takeaway? If somebody is listening to us here who is going through this right now, some kind of eating disorder or this particular eating disorder, what would you tell them?
So I was anorexic. The eating disorder that I had is anorexia. It is about really starting to build a relationship with yourself, starting to find what is good about you. And that is a process. And you need the love and support of people who you can trust completely, who do not judge you. And that is the most important thing. Because when you are judged, you start hating yourself. So the most important thing is to find people who accept you as you are, with, you know, because we are beautiful. We are all beautiful the way you are. We just need to see it.
That is very true. And many, many people never see themselves as beautiful. And that's the sad part, really.
I never saw myself as beautiful. I never. I always saw myself as less than my friends, than my family, than this and that. I always saw myself, who are you? And sometimes it still comes in, being honest, but not to that point that I suffer from an eating disorder. But sometimes I get these self-doubts and say, who am I? Who is my value? It's a continuous work. And to also be kind with yourself.
But now you know what to do. You see, that's the difference to now you know what to do when this kicks in.
Yes, yes. And this is why I believe that children need to be given this from a young age.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And that's what we're going to talk about that in a while, because you do a lot of mindfulness for children. What about your trip to Peru? How did that affect you spiritually?
Oh, so the idea of Peru came right after I walked the Camino de Santiago. So after I walked the Camino de Santiago, I remember I came back home in my living room. I'm like, this was fantastic. What's going to be next? And, you know, suddenly I hear a voice out of nowhere, Peru. Oh, he said, okay, I'm going to Peru next year. And guess what? I came back from the Camino in September. In January, I had already bought my tickets to go to Peru in June. So it started like that. And yes, I was going through a spiritual transformation. I was interested in all kinds of spiritual practices, exploring. So it was a deep spiritual journey. And I went to Peru, which actually I had a 10-day trip with a shaman, a local Inca shaman. So that's how deep spiritually it was. So he didn't speak a word of English. I was with a group of Canadian women. So I was the only Maltese with this group of women. And I was the only woman of the group who spoke a little bit of Spanish. So, you know, I became really sort of close to this shaman, because he would speak and I would start translating. And, you know, I was like in between, even though there was the tour guide who was Peruvian, not Spanish, Peruvian. But sometimes we were just us ladies with this shaman, and we needed a bit of help. They needed a bit of help to understand. And I managed to translate. And it was deep, because I deepened on the journey my relationship to the earth, because shamans really are value the earth, the sun. So I really went into this understanding more of the cosmos, the healing of the earth, being more closer to the elements, and honoring and revering each and every existence. And that is very deep, because we go on about our life taking everything for granted. We treat the earth badly. And then you go to these people who live a very basic life, but they have such deep love and reverence for the earth, for the sun, for all nature, for the wind, because they understand how they are sustaining, nourishing us, healing us mentally, physically, emotionally. So that was a huge learning experience.
If I look at this, the Camino and Peru and all this, it's kind of part of your healing process, really, that goes back to your to the problem that you had and made the person that you, you know, opened you up for what you're doing now.
Oh, definitely, definitely. And they happened in a period of a year, the Camino and Peru. So I was really going through this shift within me, through this healing, through to seeing things as I never saw them before. I was brought up in a very strict Catholic environment, and suddenly I was exposed to all different spiritual practices that I could relate to and help me heal and become more of who I am and value everything and accept and love myself even more, understand all my own powers. Powers, not in the sense of, you know, but our own internal powers that can help us move forward in love and see ourselves in a different space.
Yeah.
And understand more life, how life works.
Yeah. And I think this is, once we understand a little bit about how life works, we can work on our happiness and our contentment and understand that everything happens for a reason. And this is also why I met you, because I am not really that spiritual. I'm not the same kind of spiritual as you are, but because of you, I cleanse my chakras every morning.
You always make me laugh, Elizabeth.
I knew about chakras. I know what they are. I know what they are, you know. And the chakras are also something that many people have difficulties with, because you can't see them. You know, it's so for many people, things that you can't see don't exist. And since I have been spending time with you, even though I have known about them, I have actually begun to understand. But for those people who are listening to us and don't really know much about chakras, I would love you to elaborate a little bit on what are chakras and what do they do and why do you dance to the chakras?
Okay. So yeah, chakras. So basically we have the physical body that we can touch and see and feel, right? And we also have the energetic body. This could call it the spiritual body, isn't it? So that part that extends of in our outside ourselves and also inside of us, that though you can't see and touch, it is there. And chakras are part of the spiritual body, the energetic body, which are chakras are basically wheels of energy in our body that they spin. And when they are out of balance, they spin in totally different ways, in out of alignment. And we have many chakras, but we know mostly, and even I'm focused more on the 7 main chakras. And each chakra governs a physical organ. So they are really connected to the physical body, to the mental body, emotional body, and spiritual body. So they govern all aspects of our life and different aspects of our life. And we have like the chakras are vibrate differently. We are all vibration. We know that, right? We vibrate. We are sensitive to sound, to light, because we are part of that sound and light. So we sense it. And each chakra has a vibration, a different vibration of sight, a different vibration of light. That's why we have 7 chakras, and each chakra is a color of the rainbow. So when we think of chakras, we think, I am the rainbow, like we are the rainbows. When we see a rainbow, we're immediately happy. We can also be that happiness when our chakras are in balance. So if you see yourself as a color of the rainbow, you immediately feel, oh, I am a rainbow. And why chakra dance? Why do we dance our chakras, right? You asked me that question, mm-hmm. right? Because each chakra has a frequency, a sound frequency. The lower chakras have sort of a more earthly frequency, and the higher chakras are more airy. And chakra dance has been cleverly designed with the music to vibrate to each chakra. So when you're dancing an earthly dance, for example, a primal dance, the base chakra, you get tribal music. So you connect to that part of yourself, to your physical part, to your instincts. And the music guides you. And when you dance your heart, because we can also dance our heart, the music is more like, you know, you're dancing your heart and you feel you're in air, you want to open your hands. So it connects you automatically without having to do any effort. It connects you with your heart. And beautiful. You move your body accordingly.
Very beautiful. You know, being a very practical person, and I like metaphors. So for me, imagining, knowing that one of my chakras is out of balance is like a car, having a car with a flat tire, really. Because when one tire is not working properly anymore, all the others are pretty useless because it doesn't go.
Yes. And the idea is to keep the chakras in service all the time. You know, we have to maintain everything that we have.
Yeah.
Everything. Yeah. So we also keep them many. And as you said, if one chakra is out of balance, it's going to affect the other chakras. And this is why we have a sense of feeling, I feel so exhausted. I am mentally not clear in my head. I feel so heavy in my heart.
Yeah.
So what you're feeling can guide you to what you really need. If you're continuously feeling like something stuck in your throat, do we sometimes get this feeling?
Yeah.
Something stuck in our throat, that can indicate that you need to dance your throat chakra or do some
your throat chakra is blocked. Yeah, I mean, really, it makes a lot of sense. And you know, as I told you, I haven't really done so much before, but for example, my take on the throat chakra is to, you know, to ask that I can speak my truth, that it's not blocked by my throat chakra.
Yes, the throat chakra is about expressing your truth, expressing who you are with confidence.
Yeah,
your voice.
Bottling up your emotions and not saying what you really think is very unhealthy.
Very unhealthy. But unfortunately, we're brought up, especially hopefully not the younger generations, but my generation, at least, I was brought up not being allowed to speak my truth so much. And funnily enough, it still happens when I speak my truth, I'm very much judged.
Yes, and I feel sometimes it's really true, and I feel uncomfortable, and I think, oh my God, shouldn't have said that, and I know exactly I should have.
Exactly, it happens to me because we are so programmed that certain things are right to say, certain things are wrong to say. Mm-hmm. Who are you to speak this?
Exactly,
and
who decides?
Of course, there is a way to speak.
Yeah, of course,
we have to be always, whenever we speak, with love and compassion. And not in a way of judging people, not in a way of hurting, but it is okay to speak your truth.
Totally.
It is okay to be also weird in who you are and to let it all out, because we're used to being like, you have to be in this box rather than that box.
Yeah, no, I think so. That creates problems. Our weirdness.
Exactly. Be weird as much as you are.
So, Rainbow, Catherine Gallia. That leads me to another subject. When you started coming to the Global Woman meetings, you used to bring your little girl, Sophia. And she was a little shy at the beginning. She was lovely. And throughout the process, Sophia became part of the Global Woman Club. She went to London because you won an award, and she met everybody. And suddenly Sophia was like, more important than her mother in this Global Woman Club. And she became a co-author of a book called The Rainbow Zoo.
Yes. So yes, she's a co-author. At 6 years old, she is a published co-author. Welcome to Rainbow Zoo, a place where dreams come true. And I'm very for this. I am very grateful for Kiki Palin, who has given Sophia this amazing opportunity to write a book with her. And Kiki is one of a kind of a woman. I see her as a very special woman with a beautiful gift. And she's a children's author already. And I remember we were in those times of COVID where we used to do meetings online. And as a mother, I had no choice but to have Sophia sitting on me, a five-year-old girl, watching these Zoom meetings. So Sophia was in the meetings, and Kiki sort of saw her, and she once spoke to me and she told me, Catherine, I would like to write another book, but this time I want to involve a child. I want to give them that gift of expressing themselves, using their imagination and take it out in the world. She said, would you like, Sophia, to be my co-author, something like that? I said, oh, wow, thank you. I was very happy. But I said, I will ask Sophia, of course, if she wants to do this. Sophia, not really understanding at 5 years old, yes, mommy, what is the book going to be about? And there the journey started. And the idea of the zoo came around. We went to Paphos Zoo. We went to the zoo in Paphos. And we picked up the animals plus a unicorn. There was no unicorn.
Of course.
In the zoo.
I mean, how could you live without a unicorn?
Exactly. How can a five-year-old not have a unicorn in the zoo?
Exactly.
And then it developed into this book that it is. So Sophia giving a lot of her imaginary world and how she wants the animals, the colors and all that, the flowers, she wanted a beautiful smelling zoo, because the zoo usually smells full of poo, isn't it? But she didn't, so we had to have a lot of flowers in the zoo.
this is so beautiful. And I just want to interrupt you here in a minute, because I may forget. Kiki Palin, the person who did that with Sophia, was on my podcast. I cannot tell you off by heart right now which episode it was, but if you scroll down a little bit, because she is an absolutely gorgeous, amazing human.
Yes, she's a gorgeous, special woman. I'm very fond of her. Sophia's very fond of her. And she also wants to empower children to do a lot of good work, to see the children living in a better world, doesn't it?
Very important. Yeah, we are already getting, we're half an hour into this. We're already getting towards the end. Time flies when you're having fun. Catherine, Sophia is growing up. Okay, she's still small, but she's becoming more and more independent. What's in the pipeline for you? What do you know? And also that the other thing that I want to talk about is teaching children mindfulness. That is one of your passions, isn't it?
Yes, it is one of my passions, and I discovered it. I never thought I would be doing this. Mind you, when I was a little girl, I used to say I want to become a teacher. That never happened. But maybe that's part of me that now it's coming to, that's what I see as the teacher now. Through my own journey of, you know, doing a lot of personal development work, spiritual development, I decided to go on a mindfulness teacher training course. And part of this training course included also children. And I had Sophia, was only 1 year old at that time. I said, this is brilliant. I have a small child. So that's where the seed was planted. Now I really want to be able to share it as much as possible. And I have to say, unfortunately, in Cyprus, I haven't really been able to do that. I haven't been successful, but I don't give up. And I will find other ways of doing it. And I want also to be able to also share with parents that, because of course, if you have stressful parents, the children are going to be stressful. If you have calm parents, the children are going to be calm. So we also need to educate the parents of another way of being. We need to show the parents how we can empower our children, how we can inspire our children, how to allow them to fulfill and express their dreams. Because we as parents, we're not taught the skills. I've never been taught this. I discovered it because I'm into this whole world. I want to see a world where children are inspired, feel confident to be who they are from a young age. Because I believe if we do that, we are going to avoid so many mental disorders. In my case, I had an eating disorder. And I believe that if my parents understood me when I was young, and if my parents gave me the space to be who I am and allow me to be who I am, I would have not gone through that suffering. So I would like that children have that opportunity from that age, because we want to have a positive world, humanity. We want a world full of love and compassion, and we can give it to our children.
And it's so much easier to teach children all these things than fix adults, because all those limiting beliefs, all those wrong values that are given to us in the first 6-7 years of our age, these years are so important. I don't think not all people realize how important those years of a child is, and that we end up saying things to our children that can actually form their way of thinking for the rest of their lives. No child is born a racist. No child is born with the stuff that they are taught, you know, with the anger. And we were talking before we started recording about how children get affected, for example, also at school by being brainwashed about things that they shouldn't be.
Yes. Unfortunately, this is still the reality. And that is why it is important that at home, children are brought up in this loving, compassionate and unity, like, you know, this idea that we are all one and we can all be peaceful and you can be who you are and you can be confident to follow your dreams. And this is so, so important. And this is why I'm going deeper, even more. I'm doing more training with mindfulness for children, parents, in a more creative way, because this is important work for our future generations. And whilst we can work on transforming our limiting beliefs, it is so much harder, as you said. There's a limit, sometimes there's a limit. You feel like, I can't do anymore. But if you clear a child, they will be clear forever.
Absolutely. And this is what it's all about. Even though we keep on working on our limiting beliefs that we have. And as you said before, very, very wisely, even though you feel that you have cleared it all and you've worked on it and you have, it comes back once in a while. It comes back yes. to me as well. And but when you have tools, you know what to do.
Yes. Yes, yes, yes. And sometimes even, you know, the words of people will sort of like touch you in your sore spot, you know, mm-hmm, and it's going, you can feel like it's going, you know, those old beliefs are coming back and you're going to go to that spiraling cycle. Okay, I have the tools and you come back, but mm-hmm. not everyone does. Yeah. So if we give that to our children, then they will be fine on their life.
Yeah, I think it's so important to fill their toolbox with all those things, and also to fill their toolbox with understanding how important kindness and compassion yes. is. And I could talk to you forever, but we are going to end it here. Tell the people, where they can buy the book, Welcome to the Rainbow Zoo, and how can they find you?
So buying the book, Welcome to Rainbow Zoo, it's as an ebook on Amazon. And also they can contact me or Kiki personally for the book, and they get a signed copy of the book, either by Kiki or by Sophia. And they can find me on the website, www.katrinegalia.com. LinkedIn, they can find me as Katrin Galia. Facebook, Katrin Galia, and Katrin Galia Mindful. Katrin Galia, Empowerment Coach and Mindfulness. I also forgot how I found. And Instagram, Katrin Galia, Mindful Coach. So I can be found everywhere, sort of.
Good. We will put the link to your website in the show notes, and the Rainbow book, Rainbow Zoo book also. So thank you so much for spending time with me today. Thank you for being on Most Memorable Journeys, Katrin Galia.
Thank you for having me. It's been such a light-hearted chat with you, and you made it so much fun. So thank you so much for inviting me to the best podcasts ever.
If you enjoy my podcast, please like, share, and subscribe to my channel. You will find all the information in the show notes.